Yes, I want to be known as the psychic talk show host, the intuitive one who sees things before they happen. Our guest, Jerry Corsi, he's next. We'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Jerry, before any of this is going to happen, before they really make the push and the change, I truly feel, I believe they will do all they can to get that Second Amendment either squeezed out of the Constitution or at least pushed aside so they can start collecting guns or stopping gun sales in this country.
I think you're right, George. The Second Amendment will be the very first target of attack. It's already under attack. If you take a look at both Canada and Mexico, there's major efforts to disarm the population.
If the population is disarmed, there's nothing people can do to fight back.
That's right, and it's a major, major threat. Clearly, the globalists who are moving in this direction will see the Second Amendment as a threat, and they'll move against it. It can be counted on. Mexico is a drug cartel-controlled country. Mexico is now even trying to use the military to stop the drug cartels because the police all through the country are corrupt. And we think we're going to merge with Mexico. It's a nightmare. In the process, the move to disarm the American population, which is going to go on under this globalist movement, is going to leave Americans even more vulnerable.
See, and I'm not saying we Russian rise up against government, that you run around and shoot at people. No, no, no. And I don't want people to misunderstand where I'm coming from here. The Second Amendment is our God-given right to bear arms, to keep arms, and we need it in this country. I think it's one of the reasons, Jerry, that people haven't invaded us to the point. I have heard stories where, undercover police officers or people with concealed weapons have been in situations where they have stopped crimes because they've had their weapons. My whole point about this issue is if guns are taken away from Americans, and I got to tell you, nearly every person I know who is a legitimate gun-carrying American with permits and everything else, those people generally do not commit any crimes at all. We're talking about criminals who go out and get guns on their own. If we take guns away from legitimate, hardworking Americans, we have a problem in this country. And people who are opposed to guns don't understand that.
Well, George, I'm completely in agreement. And one of the reasons that I've fought so hard on this issue is because our fundamental rights defined in the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights, which our structure of government is designed to protect, the limited constitutional republic, is important to preserve. If we don't, we'll lose these freedoms, and the Second Amendment rights to bear arms will be the first to go, be right at the top of the list. The attacks on it are beginning. I can see it's on the globalist agenda to disarm the American public, and it will be necessary to do to complete the agenda to create a North American Union. Just as in Europe, go try to own a gun.
You know what they'll do? They'll start shutting down gun stores first.
Yes, and they'll go after.
And they're doing that. They're doing that. They're going after their licensing. They're doing it. I know it. I can feel it.
Well, you're right, George. I mean, this international movement, I just walk into the UN and see the very first statue you see is this revolver with the twisted barrel. As if revolvers were the problem in the world creating violence. It, to me, is just a complete misunderstanding and lack of understanding of why our founding fathers felt it was so important to put the Second Amendment and our right to bear arms right at the top of the list. And every dictatorship, as you point out, I mean, Hitler, Stalin, disarming the people was a key objective to taking control.
Watch the martial law. Watch then the push to try to get guns confiscated.
George, I've been writing about these emergency powers that George Bush has declared to himself and these new, national security and homeland security directives where he can declare an emergency, any emergency George Bush, the Office of the President, declares as an emergency.
A calamity, any calamity.
Any calamity, even, insurrection or natural disaster or epidemic, George Bush, the Office of the President, without the involvement of Congress, can take over all levels of government, federal, state, local, even tribal and territorial. Well, there you have it. I mean, George Bush comes in, it's a disaster here, we've got to take everybody's guns.
He basically commutes the sentence of Scooter Libby. Why isn't he letting our two Border Patrol officers who shot that drug dealer in the butt, Why aren't they getting them out of jail?
Well, it's disgraceful, George. You've got Ramos and Campion, the two Border Patrol agents who shot at a fleeing Mexican drug smuggler in prison for 11 and 12 years.
Who was trying to come into the country.
With drugs and admitted at the trial that that's what he was doing. Johnny Sutton, the prosecutor in El Paso, gave Davila, the drug smuggler, immunity. Davila came into the United States with a second load of drugs before the trial. Johnny Sutton sealed the evidence, would not let the jury hear that evidence. And Johnny Sutton let Davila get on the stand and lie, saying he was an unprofessional drug smuggler who only did this because he lost his commercial driver's license in Mexico and needed some income. It was a complete lie.
Well, these guys got 10 years, didn't they, the border agents?
11 and 12 years, tried under the wrong statute, a statute which aggravated the penalty if you used a weapon in the commission of a crime.
For shooting him in the hiney,
Shot him. That's right. And they shot him in the side of the left rear. It went across his groin, and the doctor at the trial testified it was consistent with reaching back with his left hand at a bladed movement as if he had a gun. And yet, Ramos and Campion are in prison, and a double standard. George Bush commutes the sentence of Scooter Libby, who was convicted. I mean, even Richard Nixon.
And he says now he may pardon him.
Richard Nixon had people like, you know, G. Gordon Liddy, Ehrlichman, Haldeman went to, you know, these people were convicted.
I wonder if he gets pardoned if he gets his $250,000 fine back.
That's an interesting question.
Let's take some calls, Jerry. You ready?
There's a double standard here, and it's disgraceful that our Border Patrol agents who are trying to do the job, trying to enforce our border, the message George Bush is putting out is leave our borders wide open, even to drug smugglers. And anyone who is out there, the Border Patrol agents listening tonight, they're doing a valiant service, putting their lives on the line every day, and now taking on additionally the risk that if they enforce the law and use force that's justified, they themselves might be prosecuted by prosecutors like Johnny Sutton, with the full support of Alberto Gonzalez in the Attorney General's office.
All right, so you feel bad that you helped contribute to John Kerry not making it?
Well, it's a separate issue, George. The Swift Boat Veterans for the Truth were organized to oppose John Kerry. They were not organized to support George Bush. I myself voted for George Bush twice as a personal issue, and I'm deeply disappointed in George W. Bush in the second, especially in the second term.
Let's go to the phones. You ready?
Yes.
First-time caller line, you're on the air with Jerry Corsi on Coast to Coast.
George, what a fantastic show you're doing. And Mr. Corsi, thank you, sir, for what you do. Your research is impeccable, sir.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. I am Bob. I'm calling from Mesa, Arizona.
Okay, Bob.
I'd like to go to the Amaro for a moment. I'd like to throw something out there for you to consider. I mean, I'm just an ordinary schmuck here, but...
far from that.
But what I'd like to toss out here is in the last Depression, FDR, of course, confiscated gold.
Yes.
I'm wondering, there seems to me to be another alternative here that would be a whole lot easier and yet become much more effective, and that would be to outlaw gold as a transactional item. Now, first, let me say, George, I know that you have some wonderful people who advertise on your program, and I'm not denigrating them in any way.
I understand.
As a matter of fact, I would own gold. I have gold, and I own gold.
Maybe we should stock up now.
Well, I think increasingly gold is one of the best investments you can make. And
it is in the way of the Amaro. It's something that would get in its way. And if you outlawed the transactional use of gold, you'd have every finance minister across the face of the globe within minutes that would smack their forehead and scream out loud, "Why didn't I think of that?"
Right. Well,
it would take gold out of the picture. It would force everybody to turn in their gold and have to buy their country's currency.
Well, you're probably right that another attack on gold would be made in going to a global currency. I want to make a couple points. One is that today gold is one of the most solid investments you can make, especially with the dollar under attack, especially with the likelihood that there's going to be movements towards global currencies. I want to point out, I reported on an article, Ben Stile, who was one of the top economic advisors in the Council on Foreign Relations,
yes,
published an article in Foreign Affairs saying it's the end of the national currency. The Council on Foreign Relations now is openly calling for global currencies, first regional currencies and then global currencies, to come into being. And he's saying countries should abandon national monetarism, abandon their national currencies. Monetary nationalism, he says, is incompatible with globalism. So as the European Union, as this move towards integration in North America continues, you can expect the attack on the dollar to intensify and the attack on gold to intensify. And I'd encourage people to realize that gold is going to become more valuable, especially as I think we're headed for a major, major stock market adjustment, which the stock market, as I write in the book and document, in the coming dollar crisis, we quit publishing M3 statistics. The Federal Reserve quit publishing those in July of last year. And those statistics show the growth of the monetary fund. There's been a tremendous amount of liquidity, credit. The hedge funds now account for half of the activity on Wall Street. They're leveraged with borrowings up to 50 to 1. When that bubble bursts, it's going to be even bigger than when the housing bubble bursts. And the valuable commodity that's going to persist through all this is gold.
Okay, Bob, thanks for the call. Let's go next to East of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George, I'm a big fan of Coast to Coast AM and of you and Art, of course.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I'm kind of upset with you tonight. At the beginning of the show, you kind of started off on questioning if terrorism even existed.
No. I throw things out for people to think. Don't get me wrong. Terrorism exists. Who's behind it? That's the big question.
Okay, who's behind terrorism? I think sometimes the show and certain guests, I believe, give off the wrong impression. I believe we need to keep an open mind, but not so open to the point where our brains start to fall out and all logic and reason goes out the window. Terrorism has been around for so long. I mean, let's go back to 1983 during the Iran hostage crisis. Was Reagan behind that? Absolutely not. And that's just the beginning of it. We can go back to Lebanon when a Marine barracks was bombed and 243 Marines were killed. 242 Marines were killed. And it's a terrible tragedy. I also have some other things.
Can I comment on for the...
Oh, yeah, sure. Let's keep the dialogue going.
We're both saying that terrorism exists. The point that we're making is still a valid point, and that is we've got to realize that terrorism can still be manipulated politically. And what George and I were both saying is we want to make sure that when Michael Chertoff makes statements saying there's going to be another...
His gut tells him that there's going to be another attack.
That's a legitimate statement, not just an attempt to manipulate politics. That was our only point.
Right, but when Michael Chertoff makes a statement like that, maybe you're looking into it too far and saying, oh, well, this is convenient for the administration to be saying this at this time, when all he's doing is he's making a generalized
statement. Well, but it is convenient. See, as you well know, I don't believe in coincidences. And at this particular point, the administration's popularity is at the lowest level it's ever been. Am I correct?
Yes, you are absolutely
okay.
Correct.
I mean, what better way, coincidental, if something horrible happens to begin to divert our attention from this Iraqi war, which is tearing apart the Congress and the rest of this country?
That's right. And George, I point out in the book, and I quoted Robert Pastor. Robert Pastor is one of the, is a professor at American University. He's one of the intellectual elite who's been pressing for this North American community, more institutions to make us think more like North Americans. And Robert Pastor was quoted in an interview, a Spanish interview, in which he said the next 9/11 may be just the ticket to force the North American integration further down the path. So we've all got to be aware that terrorism can be manipulated politically for certain ends.
Yeah, Zach, see, there's no doubt in my mind that these crazed Muslims with their sick ideologies are running around blowing up people and doing what they're doing. The issue is what's fueling it.
Right. Okay, what's fueling it? Like I said, 1983, Islamic jihadists took over our embassy, okay? You have Lebanon, 242 Marines being killed. Okay,
horrible. But what's? I agree with that.
Was Bill Clinton behind that?
No. Nobody said any of those people were behind it. That never came out of my mouth.
Okay. I apologize. I don't want to put any words in your mouth. I'm a big fan of you, George.
I know that. I just said, isn't it ironic that we have this horrible situation going on worldwide now, and there are companies making billions on it that wouldn't have made a dime had it not occurred?
Look, I think we also need to make the point clear. The main beneficiary of the oil in Iraq will be Iraqis, okay? They will be the ones.
If there is an Iraq.
What do you mean if there is an Iraq?
Look, as long as this
president is in office, George, he will see through the war in Iraq, okay? He's already said that's going to be the next president that's going to have to make the decision if he wants to pull.
Would you agree that right at this point it's out of control?
Is it out of control? No, I disagree by saying it's out of control. Well, look, there's going to be terrorist and suicide bombings in that country. These are acts of desperation. They want to do everything in their power to stop a stable democracy from flourishing.
Zach, it's a lawless country right
now. It is absolutely not a lawless country.
It is a lawless country.
We have 160-some thousand American soldiers in that country, and they're doing a very good job.
No, I didn't say they weren't. I said it was 2 days ago, 200 people were killed in bombs, including two Americans.
You're making it sound like it's anarchy, George. You're making it sound like it's anarchy.
It is lawless.
I wouldn't say it's lawless. Remember, there's elections that were...
The Sunni clerics, listen, Zach, the clerics, the Sunnis and the Shiite clerics are begging Iraqi citizens to take up their own arms because they don't think anyone else can help defend them. Now, what do you...
You were talking about the Second Amendment not too long ago, saying that's one of the great things about this country. Well, guess what? There are terrorists in that country, and I believe that Iraqi citizens...
Whoa. Wait a minute. Do you think at this point those insurgents are getting guns by going for permits?
So of course they're not getting guns.
No, it's
by
the
going to permits. I mean, they don't have that much bureaucracy set up yet. But
meanwhile, the good Iraqis who are out there, and there are millions who are, they don't have weapons to defend themselves.
Right. And let me say this: look, capturing Osama bin Laden would definitely help Bush's approval ratings if we could capture
it. Should have been done 6 years ago.
Yes, but also keep in mind we haven't had another terrorist attack on this country for 6 years, George.
Well, I know that, and God knows why.
Because of things that President Bush has implemented, like Homeland Security, and putting people in charge of Homeland Security, like Tom Ridge and Michael Chertoff.
No, I think they're waiting for the big one, Zach. These people are patient. These terrorists are patient. They sit and they wait. They want to try to outdo themselves. And I'm telling you, you know, I feel funny about it. Look, we're coming up to the break. Zach, thank you for the call. That's one of the good parts about Coast to Coast. We don't have to agree on anything, but you're going to have your say. You're not going to get hung up on. We're going to a break. Jerry, stay with us. We've got lots of calls. Mr. Corsi, you got to stay with us another hour.
I'm looking forward to it, George.
Right.
Thank you.
We'll be back in a moment. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. I like this show tonight. It's different. I don't get a chance to do this all the time. We're talking about crystal skulls tomorrow. See how it just changes? Jerry Corsi is next. We'll take your calls, but I'll keep him another hour as well, right here on Coast to Coast AM. These people who are heading up these huge corporations, Jerry, that are spearing this push, you know, they've got their incredible houses, and they've got their cars, and they've got their planes, and they've got their attempt they can go to, you know, they can go to Paris and London and anything they want all the time. Do they even care about middle America?
Well, George, I think that's part of the problem. You know, I document in the book, we've created now this North American Competitiveness Council under the Security and Prosperity Partnership. Very few people know about it. And it's supposedly an advisory group for the SPP. And on the board are the executives, you know, the executives Chevron, Ford, FedEx, GE, General Motors, Kansas City Southern, which is billing itself as the NAFTA Railroad, Lockheed Martin, which is putting sensors all up and down Interstate 35, by the way, with NASCO, one of the North American Super Corridor Coalition trade groups that's supporting the superhighway. And Hutchison Whampoa, the Communist Chinese company, has an interest in that sensor project, by the way. These are companies where the executives live a charmed life. They're making huge amounts of money. They lived with limousines and expense accounts. The paying for the illegal aliens who come into the United States and demand benefits and welfare is inconsequential to the heads of these corporations. They're interested in how they increase their bonuses with their quarterly profits. Now, if they have to use slaves in China or export jobs from the United States, it's fine with them. They live a life in which they're not touched by the ordinary concerns. I'm reminded of George H.W. Bush, who gave two speeches on New World Order and yet did not know how to use a grocery store scanning checkout system. What was the last time he'd been to a grocery store? That's the problem, is when we get these elites and multinational corporations who are setting a continental agenda for the rest of us, they forget about the majority of Americans who are worried about how do I put food on the table, how do I keep my home, and how many jobs do I and my wife have to work in order to send our kids to school? These are the questions. Most Americans are living within one or two paychecks of absolute disaster.
Some restaurants are starting to experiment with a little machines, credit card devices at the table now, Jerry. And I bet they're going to do away with some of the fine waiters and waitresses we have in this country, where you sit at a computer at your table, punch in what you want, and go and get it yourself.
Well,
or they have a one person up there waiting, running it to your table. And then when you're ready to leave, you swipe your card, you leave your tip, and you leave.
Well, it's amazing. I sometimes wonder, I hear President Bush saying, the illegal aliens are in doing jobs Americans won't do. And I'm saying to myself, wait a minute, before we had this wave of illegal immigration, and it's relatively recent, the 12 million admitted illegal aliens here, the majority came about three-quarters during Bush's term, with the wide-open borders intentionally left wide open. You mean before we'd had this, nobody cleaned any hotel rooms. We didn't wash dishes in restaurants. We didn't find ways to mow our lawns. The idea that's really here is the illegal aliens and this globalization movement is a desire to lower wages for the average person, to compete. I was walking in New York City past a construction site, I believe it was on 44th Street, and the union was protesting that the jobs were being given to illegals who were working below scale. And I'm saying to myself, this is really what it's about.
I see. I wouldn't mind if income went down as long as everything else went down with it, but it's not.
Well, and George, our government is manipulating the inflation statistics. I mean, I look at it, home values have doubled and tripled. We're paying now over $3 a gallon for gasoline. Food expenses, what's $100 buying at a grocery store anymore? And yet we're told we have zero inflation. I just don't buy it. I think it's a manipulation of the statistics and an attempt to, again, convince the American people everything is fine. Play the SPP.gov with its, facts versus myths. This is just all a dialogue between friendly countries, and I think sometimes cue up the Bobby McFerrin music.
Hey, Alex.
Don't worry, be happy, everybody.
Alex Jones says that the Texas Governor Perry went to the most recent Bilderberg meeting.
Right, he did. And Alex Jones is right, and Alex Jones has also some very good research. He was right. Governor Perry was invited, expense-free, to go to the most recent Bilderberger conference, and when questioned by the Texas newspapers what he did there and what speech he gave there, he said it was secret and he couldn't tell.
It was probably about the corridor.
Yeah, it was clearly he got invited for his courageous work defending Sintra, the Spanish Investment Consortium, and vetoing all these bills passed almost unanimously by the Texas legislature that would have blocked the highway for at least 2 years.
Let's go to the full bank of calls we've got, and then we'll do some more next hour. Wildcard line, you're on with Jerry Corsi. Hi there.
Hi there, George. Great to speak to you again.
Thank you.
Great show tonight, as usual. This is Mike from Livermore, California.
Yeah.
And I basically a little statement here and a few questions in it.
Okay, Michael.
Number one, another candidate that who could possibly be a great ally in this is Tom Tancredo. Unfortunately, he's not going to have enough money or anything to even be anywhere in this race whatsoever. So the next thing was Giuliani. Has he ever been to the Bilderberg conferences? And if so, I mean, that pretty much is a cinch as to where he's going to fall if he lands into the office. On the other side, it's going to be Clinton. We already know she's in on all of this with the Bilderbergs anyway. So really, where do we land? I don't see where how we can stop this, because without the money and the support of the media, you don't get elected unless it's from a grassroots. And unfortunately, there isn't enough people out there in the grassroots who are listening to this program right now. I mean, you got the biggest audience ever, but these people are not activists by nature. So they're not going to stir it up until the mainstream media. I mean, where's the Woodwards and the Burns?
Well, we hope what happens, as it did with the ports, and it has, as it did when we were covering the SARS story years ago, that the mainstream picks up. They listen to this program, even though individuals might not be able to get things done. Maybe the mainstream then picks it up, Jerry Corsi.
Well, George, the Coast to Coast has a huge audience, and many in the audience are activists. Many in the audience have listened to the show and changed policy. I was on the show talking with George on these new emergency power declarations that George Bush voted himself. In May, we had a show on it. Very quickly afterwards, I was on Washington Journal with the show, and it got coverage all over the country. It was first mentioned on Coast to Coast. That's an indication where the show has moved public opinion.
I've been following the story since you brought it out on here. I've listened to you on Lee Rogers' show in the morning. I mean, you do a great job. You're one of the last saviors, who the vanguard against all of this. And to move on to the grabbing the guns. Now, who's going to do this? Is it going to be the local police through laws, or is it going to be a military action from the courts that you say are going to be set up? Because I'll tell you, if it's a military action, that's going to be tough to get Marines to go against the Constitution that they've sworn to uphold.
Well,
I agree with that. How would they do it, Jerry?
Well, it's very interesting because, you see, few people realize that the John Warner Act, which was Appropriations Act in 2007, the Posse Comitatus Act was repealed. That means, essentially, to kind of cut to the chase, that George Bush could militarize, put the military in domestic situations, could militarize the National Guard, would not have to stand aside and wait for, state forces to take control. Under these powers George Bush has voted himself, signed by these presidential declarations and these acts that have been passed, if you had the next Katrina occur, George Bush could just say, it's an emergency, I'm in charge, the federal troops are coming in, and by the way, everybody turn in their guns at such and such a location.
Would he also say, we're holding the elections for a while?
Well, George, and I wrote about that and we talked about it. It's within the powers that have been, there's no limit to the powers that George Bush declared for himself.
I mean, one might say, there's just too much chaos. We're not going to have the amount of people vote as should. Everything's screwed up. We can't get to the polls. So we'll just hold it off until things calm down.
These declarations themselves are unconstitutional. There's nothing in them that would prevent George Bush from canceling an election. And I caution everybody to remember, you may say, well, George Bush would never do this. I like George Bush. I don't believe he's a globalist, etc. But if you feel that, think about, well, if you don't like Hillary Clinton, what if she's next? Our founding fathers advised us not to give excessive presidential power beyond the Constitution to the presidency, because the president would use those powers and negate the Constitution, and that's what we're talking about.
Well, I'm glad you're saying this, and you voted for him twice.
I voted for him twice.
I mean, how can you be saying this then?
Well, I'm deeply disappointed. I mean, again, George W. Bush is...
Would you have said this about him 8 years ago? Years ago?
Even 7 or 8 years ago, George W. Bush was presented as a conservative. He certainly, through the first term, tried to present himself as a conservative. The second term, even have, you know, Jerry Falwell dying and George Bush doesn't even go to the funeral.
Well, would it even have come into your head that you would even have thought that he possibly would delay an election? And he's, if he's listening right now in Washington, D.C., he's probably jumping up and down saying, is this guy crazy? I'm not going to do that.
8 years ago, 4 years ago, Georgia would never have entered my head. Today, after what I've seen in the second term, Security and Prosperity Partnership declared in March 2005, and from then on, Harriet Myers nominated for the Supreme Court, his fix-it lawyer in the Texas lottery scandals, going back to years ago in Texas when George Bush was governor. These things have deeply disappointed me, and I think it's conceivable that George Bush could cancel an election if he declared an emergency. The powers are there. He granted them to himself. I don't know why he granted them if he didn't intend possibly to use
them. It's going to be a fascinating year and a half.
It sure is.
Wild Card Line, you're on the air with us. Hello there.
Yeah, I also voted for Bush two times, and I am very disappointed based on what happened there. And I think Mr. Bush is probably a very good man, but his handlers are isolating him from the truth. Not only have they got the border agents in jail, they're actually prosecuting U.S. Marines for doing their job a little too well against an enemy they're supposed to be fighting anyway. But my point was is that your guest was talking about a whole bunch of things that I remember reading about 30 years ago in like one of those Seventh-day Adventist magazines, all about one world government and they're going to do like a one world currency. And it just seems like all that stuff that some religious church group predicted, I don't know how many years ago, but I remember 30 years ago, seems to be like it's fallen in place there. And I just wanted to get your guest's opinion on whether he read stuff like that as well.
Okay, let's get your opinion on that.
Yeah, it's a question, George, that I get asked all the time, and I get many emails. I'm not myself a scholar on biblical prophecy. I mean, I've read the Bible, but that's not my area of scholarship. But I get emails, and I've been on the prophecy radio shows many times. I get prophecies from Daniel, prophecies from Ezekiel, especially on Iran, prophecies from Revelation on one world government and being issued, having to have a number to do commerce.
The sign of the beast.
Sign of the beast in relationship to the real ID. And I'll tell you that, you know, not being a scholar, but looking at the scripture after the calls and emails I get, I can see where people are concerned that biblical prophecies are being fulfilled. My point of view from being, my training is a political scientist. That's where my PhD from Harvard in political science. That's my discipline. What concerns me and why I'm writing so hard about this is the sovereignty of the United States, the freedoms that we hold are dear to me. I don't believe the thousands of people who fought and died and are buried in Arlington died for North American Union. They died for the United States of America. And I think, like Abraham Lincoln said at the battlefield in Gettysburg, whether or not this republic will long preserve and continue depends upon us and our vigilance to stop these moves, including these moves towards regional government.
Do we say, Jerry, times change, you got to go with the flow? Look what's happened. You know, computers have gone from massive size to real small. Things change.
Things change, George, but the fundamental human nature doesn't change. And our freedoms declared by the Constitution and Declaration are inalienable, given by God. And the wisdom that went into our Constitution was to say that these forms of limited government are naturally right. They're part of human nature. If we don't have a constitutional republic that limits the power of the different branches, legislative, executive, judicial, we won't preserve freedoms because one of the powers will grab all power for themselves. I mean, we learn this from the Roman history, ancient Roman history. The council used to declare emergencies, like George Bush has just declared himself these powers. Said it's an emergency, we're in charge, and the Roman Senate can go home, we'll protect the Republic. Well, that didn't work. The dictators never let down the powers. And I fear the same could happen again.
Let's go next to our West of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, Kevin from Edmonton calling.
Hey,
Mr.
Kevin.
Corsi. I see if the U.S. Falls, economically first it falls, then militarily it falls. With this type of scenario, which you're painting, which is sounds very viable to me. The United States for the last 60 years has really maintained the world peace, shall we say. We haven't had a major war. And let's say the United States is military very weak, economically very weak. I see the possibility of these great regional powers going to war, and I see a major, major war making World War One and Two look like.
Well, you may be right. See, Jerry, I don't see us weak militarily. I think we have put too much into the military assets for that to happen. What do you think?
Well, I think, George, we need to reconstitute our military. We need to go back to a Reagan model of a strong reserve and a military that's capable of fighting a variety of kinds of wars. I'm very seriously concerned that the military is getting weakened and debilitated in this continuing conflict in Iraq. And I write in the book extensively that, you know, the whole premise of this North American Union movement, the integration of North America, is that if we trade with China, we allow China to hold all this foreign exchange currency and to be involved buying infrastructure in the United States, China will be somehow peaceful and our friend because it'll be in their economic interest not to fight us. And I don't think that's true. China still has a very rigid communist ideology. Just try being a Christian in China and see how far you get. You won't get very far. China is a dogmatic country, and what they've done with a lot of the foreign exchange currency is build a very, very strong military.
Well, what you don't want to do is be the head of their Food and Drug Administration right. Because they just executed that guy.
Well, and
he had his hand in the cookie jar, and many people died because of what he did.
And, George, we make a mistake to think that China's our friend even on trade. They're using slave labor, which is an unfair advantage. And look at all these defective food products that China is shipping to us.
Yeah.
China has no concern for their own environment. They've shipped us toothpaste, pet food. I mean, now we're finding a whole range of, you know, fish and other food products that are contaminated. Stories that the bottled water coming from China is just tap water. I mean, how we can trust that China is going to be, you know, on the same standards that we are, and we're shipping our manufacturing to China for the economic advantage of the multinational corporations, that weakens the United States. Franklin Roosevelt could legitimately say before World War II that we were the arsenal of democracy.
Jerry, somebody by the name of George W. Bush has fast blasted me and said, this is not true. None of this is true. I don't think that's him, though. I think someone is using his name. We'll be back in a moment with the rest of the phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.